Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. What you're going to hear in this video is my analysis and best understanding of the role of the Jews in the overthrow of white South Africa. What I was doing here was I was answering some questions from an American lady named Nancy Hitt, and she and Monica Schaefer appear on a show together. And Nancy had actually lived in South Africa at one point in time, so she actually remembers South Africa as it used to be under white rule. She's one of the few Americans who actually had lived here and knew what the whites were like. So Nancy sent me some questions, and this is the audio that I did to answer them. With regard to your question, I wonder if you would like to do a short audio about the vast Jewish involvement in the attempted overthrow of the white South African government, taken from the book Rivonia Unmasked. I recently read it and was surprised to see the number of Jews who were involved, along with some educated blacks, no Afrikaners and almost no Indians. Okay, let me just respond to your question, but what I'm going to do is I'll actually summarize the Jewish overthrow over a century, because Jews were involved in politics heavily. When I had Jewish friends, I noticed that Jews only have two interests. And I talk about even at the synagogue, because once I went with my Jewish friend to, once or twice I went to a synagogue with him where they had an auditorium next to the synagogue, and then people would come and talk. I remember once going and listening to a talk from somebody from Israel. And these Jews, even when I spoke to him, these Jews, their rabbi is constantly arranging talks for the Jews. And the talks are not about religious topics. The talks are about politics and business. That's all that the Jews actually care about, is politics and business. And Jews have meddled incessantly, massively, in the politics of South Africa, in the same way that they do in America and everywhere else. But they meddle in it to a tremendous degree. So I just want to try and cover a bunch of things that I've come across in my years as I've been digging into Jews and South African politics. I will do more detailed stuff later, but this is an overview. Early on in the 1920s, the South African Communist Party was created. I don't know if it was created by Jews or just by British English people who were in South Africa. But the South African Communist Party was started in the early 1920s, and it was really pushing communism. I had heard that it was the second oldest communist party in the world, but somebody else told me there's another one that existed even before it. So it may have been the third oldest communist party in the world. Either way, it's one of the early communist parties that started out of the Soviet Union, outside of the Soviet Union. Initially, the Communist Party was pushing for white communism. They wanted whites to seize control of South Africa, white communists. And there is, in fact, a battle that took place in the 1920s, in the early 1920s. It's regarded as the miners' strike, but it was actually a total communist revolution, and it was fought here in Johannesburg, and almost 1,000 people were killed, and it was a white communist revolution. But the people who ran the Communist Party were either other whites or as you'll see later, the ones that I know for sure were Jews. Now, one of the early Jews who was a very big role player was a guy called Bunting. Bunting ran the South African Communist Party for a very long time, for decades. There are two Jews, two quotes, white Jews, who ran the Communist Party for decades and decades. The first one was Bunting, and the other one was Joe Slovo. Between the two of them, they ran the Communist Party for, you're talking like about 60 years between the two of them, 60 or 70 years that they ran the South African Communist Party. First Bunting and later Joe Slovo. Now, there was a black organization called ANC, the African National Congress, and it exists to this day, and it is now the ruling party of South Africa. But the original ANC was actually quite a quiet, well-behaved black organization that peacefully wanted to deal with the whites. And the ANC was really quiet and well-behaved. However, in the 1920s, a leader of the ANC went to Russia. There were two guys. One was a black guy and one guy was a colored guy. I can't remember their names at the moment. But these two guys went to the Soviet Union and they met with Russian officials and they asked them for Russian support for black politics in Africa. And Stalin decided to tell the South African Communist Party, which was run by Bunting, by the Jew Bunting. Stalin issued the order that the South African Communist Party must work for the overthrow of whites, that the future South African government must be a black communist government. Bunting, the Jew, didn't like this. And he actually went to Russia to try and get Stalin to change his mind. But he was overridden and the instruction from Russia was the Communist Party must work for a black communist government in South Africa. The order was officially issued, I think, in 1928. So the Jew Bunting and the other white communists, they all now had to work for black rule in South Africa. But at a higher level, the Soviet Union had already decided also that it was going to overthrow all of the European empires. And the British Empire was the first one on the list. And they said that all around the world, they would support what were known as native movements, and that they were going to get Asians, blacks, South Americans, everybody in the Third World who was non-white, the Bolsheviks in the Soviet Union decided that they were going to support all these non-whites in their effort to overthrow white rule all across Asia and Africa. So keep in mind that the Soviet Union was really controlled by Jews. Jews played a huge role in it. Even Putin said that the original Duma was 80% Jewish, etc. So the Soviet Union, the communist Soviet Union, Jewish dominated, now was out to break all the European empires everywhere, to stir up rebellion of non-whites all across the planet. And remember, the goal was to overthrow everything, even overthrow the whole world in your typical big Jewish style. They think big and they try to do enormous things. And this led to many, many problems. Later, the Cold War, etc. But in South Africa, these communists, led by the Jew Bunting, were now focusing on bringing the blacks into communism, teaching the blacks communism, and working to overthrow the whites. The big event that occurred in South Africa was 1948. 1948 was when the Afrikaners, the Boer Afrikaners, managed to regain political control of South Africa. After the Second Anglo-Boer War, they had lost to the British and they'd lost control of the country, and the British were trying to bring their liberalism in and they were trying to control the politics. But eventually, the Boer Afrikaners managed to regain control of South Africa. And the big event was 1948. They had formed a political party called the National Party. And the National Party initially was anti-Semitic, it was racist, and it had leanings and lessons from Germany. Some of the people in it had been to Germany. Specifically, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd had studied in Germany, had picked up lots of stuff from Germany. I'm totally convinced that Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd was a closet National Socialist. And the media in South Africa actually openly said that he was a Nazi and a Nazi supporter when he was the editor of a newspaper during World War II. But once apartheid came into being in 1948, this government then started creating racial policies. Now, it started classifying people according to race and trying to rule South Africa, breaking people apart by race, and starting to control South Africa, putting whites in certain areas, blacks in other areas, etc. It was now trying to segregate the country. The Jews were considered to be white people, and so none of this affected the Jews negatively. Not at all. The Jews were treated as whites, they had all the privileges of whites. So the Jews were not negatively impacted by apartheid at all. In fact, they benefited from all the privileges of the whites. But that didn't change anything. One then discovers that there are all kinds of other Jews in South Africa who are communists, and they all go and start assisting blacks to overthrow the whites. And the Jews are busy educating and politicizing the blacks into the need to destroy the whites. So after 1948, by the 1950s, as the government was starting to put out more racial policies, now you find that the communists and the Jews and the Russians are all stirring up the blacks. And in the mid-1950s, the Russians are tossed out of South Africa. The South African government throws the Russians out because the Russians are giving the blacks money and stirring them up towards revolution. So you find this mixture of the Jews inside South Africa working with the Bolsheviks and Soviets outside South Africa and working to help the blacks and prepare the blacks to fight the whites. And mostly it's just a bunch of protests, etc. But the big event that occurs is that a guy called Nelson Mandela, who's an attorney, a black attorney who works for a Jewish attorney, he is a black lawyer who becomes a communist. And he then also infiltrates the ANC, and he and the Jews basically create an organization called Umkhonto we Sizwe, which is known in South Africa as MK, and it's got the sort of Jewy sounding name of the Spear of the Nation. I must tell you, that sounds to me like a lot of Jewish marketing there. So the Spear of the Nation is the first militant, armed, revolutionary organization created in South Africa to fight the whites. But it's actually Jews and blacks working together. And when I looked into the stuff pertaining to the Rivonia trial, I can tell you that I'm absolutely certain that the Jews were actually driving the agenda. The blacks would never have thought these things up. Jews were driving the agenda. Jews were hunting for blacks, gathering blacks, looking for blacks who could be leaders, etc. And this is why I'm absolutely convinced why Nelson Mandela has been turned into a saint around the world, is because I think the Jews struggled for a long time to find a black who's willing to kill, who's willing to kill whites and be loyal to the Jews. So Mandela was working with all these Jews, and there were a bunch of blacks as well as one Indian. I think his name is Kathrada, I think. And you'll see that it's mostly Jews and mostly blacks. It's almost 50-50, this grouping. And these blacks are actually working in houses and things in Johannesburg, Rivonia being just the suburb where they were caught, where the main house was. But these Jews have got houses all over the place, secret houses, etc., and they're bringing the blacks in, and the blacks who are plotting with the Jews, they're working in the houses of Jews, and they're hobnobbing with the Jews, and they are partying with the Jews, and they are friends with the Jews. And it is during all this time that this group with Mandela and the Jews and the blacks, that they come up with this plan to cause South Africa to explode into violent racial conflict, and they want to unleash 7,000 terrorists, black terrorists, across South Africa to lay landmines, to plant bombs, to kill people. They want to do enormous killing in South Africa, but it's this group of Jews with blacks. And they do all kinds of things. They set up a radio station that operates and puts out propaganda for the blacks, etc. But little do they know that the military and the military intelligence are moving in on them, and they are busy spying on them and intercepting their communications. Anyway, the time comes where the police then raid this place in Rivonia, and they grab all these Jews and blacks, and they then put them on trial for high treason. Now, for high treason, they should all have been executed, and they had hundreds of witnesses. The fact that Mandela and the Jews who were with him, that none of them were executed, is itself a whole other story. There's a lot of stuff that suggests international Jewish pressure on South Africa. And do you know that the prosecutor, the state prosecutor for the apartheid government, was a Jew? So there's many, many things at work as to why, when the whites had this rock-solid case of high treason and the death penalty is what should have come, all those blacks and all those Jews should have all been hanged, but they weren't. None of them were executed. They got varying sentences and life sentences, and eventually everybody was let go. That in and of itself is a travesty of justice. But I will deal with that when we look at the Rivonia trial. What I want to mention are other things that the Jews did over and above the Rivonia trial, which are very important. The greatest secret in South Africa is that Jews assassinated the Prime Minister, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. I did some videos about that. The evidence for that comes out in various places. And all of it's been hidden, and only small groups of people managed to find all this data. But the raw fact is that the greatest secret in the history of South Africa the murder of Verwoerd, which is very much mysterious, like the murder of JFK. And these things happened within a couple of years of each other, as well as the murder of George Lincoln Rockwell of the American Nazi Party. The murder of Rockwell took place shortly after Verwoerd was killed. So in all these things, you'll find that Jews were involved. But in South Africa, there was a particular Jew who was among the founding Jews of this uMkhonto weSizwe, same organization that Nelson Mandela was in. His name was Dr. Solly Jacobson. And this Jewish psychologist was the key planner and organizer of both attempts to kill Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd. And of course, on the second attempt, Verwoerd is killed. And when Verwoerd dies, the government dives in to try and find out what's going on, etc., etc. And then some strange things happen, and then they kind of let it go. Again, almost like the Rivonia trial. I don't know if Jews played a role in subverting that thing, whether the police and others got to the bottom and realized some of the connections, I don't know. But in the early 60s, you had the Rivonia trial, and then later in the 60s, you had the death of Verwoerd. And Jews were the driving forces in both of those massive things. Now, Verwoerd was actually the most powerful and intellectual of all the South African leaders. And everybody will tell you that Verwoerd is the architect of apartheid. And Verwoerd was absolutely, totally devoted to apartheid. I'm absolutely convinced that he was a national socialist. And when Verwoerd died, they lost their most energetic guy who was pushing South Africa towards true segregation and also ultimately towards national socialism, because Verwoerd actually even said that whites should do their own physical labor. But he said that in private, not in public. I knew President P.W. Botha of South Africa, and he told me that he was on excellent terms with Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, and he said to me that the death of Verwoerd was a huge blow to apartheid and to the politics of South Africa. He told me that we'd lost our best guy. So once Verwoerd was dead, then you got other guys who were much softer. And I'm going to tell you a couple of other things that I've discovered in other research of mine, which until now I haven't published and I haven't given the greater detail of it out yet. But the guy who came after Verwoerd was a guy called Forster. And Forster initially was thought to be a very hardcore right-wing guy. He'd even been in the Ausserwahr Brandwach, which was a pro-Nazi, pro-German organization at the time of World War II. But as Forster grew older, Forster became softer and softer, and he clearly didn't have the kind of IQ of Verwoerd. What I discovered, which I'd not put out before, is that in the early 1970s, Forster actually began to seek friendships with the Jews. Forster went to the Jews, and there were people who introduced him to Jews, and he then went and hobnobbed with Jews. So it was Forster who, for some reason, felt that he needed the support and friendship of the Jews. And from then onwards, all of Forster's moves were in many ways similar to the Republicans in America, where they talk strong but they don't act strong. So they talk, yes, we're going to fight for this country, we're going to fight the Russians, we're going to fight communism, but when push comes to shove, he's much softer and weaker. And in actual fact, Forster did a very, very stupid thing in the mid-1970s, a thing that led to the destruction of Rhodesia. He met with the Jew Kissinger, he engaged in a thing called détente. Détente was just a total bullshit idea. I'm not going to waste your time with it. Dreadful idea, horrific idea, pushed by the Jew Kissinger. And it was almost like a kind of a liberal bunch of garbage that they were pushing at that point. And it was a disaster. All that detente Kissinger stuff led directly to the total collapse of Rhodesia. That's a fact. And Forster was busy fooling himself, thinking that he was doing great with the blacks in Africa, that suddenly the blacks in Africa would accept South Africa as an apartheid state as long as they hand over Rhodesia. So Forster went and did the dumbest, retarded things, and he did all of this stuff after he'd become friends with these Jews. So after the death of Verwoerd, the fact of the matter is that nobody in South Africa ever learned publicly that the Jews were behind the killing of Verwoerd. So all of that stuff was now quietly forgotten. And it's very possible that Forster and the National Party all actually knew the deeper, uglier story, but that now, in order to be buddies with the Jews and that they need the Jews, that they then let things go. So all of the evil Jewish things that were done with Mandela, with Verwoerd, all those things were quietly, quietly forgotten. So by the time I came to live in South Africa in the 1980s, there were lots and lots and lots of Jews here, and the Jews were seen as good people. But the other thing that Jews did in South Africa from decades ago as well is that while many Jews were involved in communism, there were other Jews, let's call them the good Jews. The good Jews started liberalism in South Africa. And the wealthy, honest, let's call it the wealthy, honest, good Jews, are Rothschild representatives like Oppenheimer. They were using their mass media to push liberalism. So all the English mass media in South Africa pushed liberalism. Now, Jewish liberalism is still pushed in South Africa to this day. The current political party for that is called the DA, the Democratic Alliance. But like anything Jewish, it's gone through many, many name changes. It used to have a bunch of other names, and then every 10 years or so they changed the name again in typical Jewish fashion. So the main person who drove the liberalism was the super-rich Jewess, Helen Suzman. She was the driving force of liberalism in South Africa. And then every now and then you get the odd, stupid Afrikaner who actually falls for the Jewish claptrap, who then takes part in it. There was some Afrikaans professor, I forget his name. He also ran the party for a short while. So liberalism in South Africa was driven by Jews, mainly Helen Suzman, and communism was driven by Jews, either Bunting or Joe Slovo. Once the real fighting started in the 1960s and 70s, Joe Slovo went out of the country because he was being hunted down by mainly the South Africans, but also the Rhodesians. The South Africans tried to kill him. They sent him a parcel bomb, but his wife, Ruth First, opened the bomb and it blew her away. And so you've got the Jews with communism inciting the blacks to violence, and then you've got the Jews with liberalism who are nibbling away at white morale, bringing down white morale and trying to push the whites away from standing up for themselves. So Jews are at both ends of the spectrum and they're putting pressure on the whites. In the one case, telling the blacks to kill the whites. In the other case, telling the whites to be buddies with the blacks. And they're pushing the whites. And so you've got the evil Jews who are the communists and the good Jews who play at liberals. But at the end of the day, they are both working towards breaking down the whites. And the whites think that, oh, there are just these bad Jews, but hey, we can trust all these good Jews. Meanwhile, it's Jews working with Jews, and the only losers in the room are the white Afrikaners. And as things heated up in the 1980s, after Rhodesia and the Portuguese were out of the way, and the world focused its attention, and the Jews could get all the attention focused on the white South Africans, you know, that's when the things got really, really hot and nasty. And make no mistake, the liberal Jews are busy breaking down white morale, breaking them down quietly and gently, pushing the whites away from their natural tendencies. The whites want to smash these blacks, they want to defeat the communists, they want to fight for their country. But the Jews are constantly there, bringing down morale. Whenever I've gone to bookstores with old books about South Africa, I've found that the vast majority of books written about South Africa in English, huge chunks of these books are all written by Jews. Jews like Nadine Gordimer, there's just tons and tons of them. And all these Jews are working against apartheid and against the natural racial defenses of the whites. And there's a book, for example, called The Unpopular War. And it goes on about, oh, this is so bad and nobody really wants to fight. And they go and they find all the garbage, all the weaklings. And then they come and they write up about it in the book. And they do things to break down morale. That's one thing that I can see about the white South Africans, is that the Jews and their liberal buddies were working hard to break down their morale, to point them in the wrong direction, and to tell them, no, you mustn't fight the blacks, you must strike deals with the blacks. It'll work better than you think. Meanwhile, it's all total hogwash. But that is just a quick summary of the Jews from one end to the other, from the 1920s to the 1990s, and the role that they played in the breakdown of white rule in South Africa. And another thing that the whites inside South Africa didn't know, that only came out later in much more recent times, is that all these good Jews who live in South Africa and are honest and just liberals, they are pumping out information, they're giving out information to Jews and liberals and enemies outside South Africa so that they can smack the white South Africans more. And on top of it, you get Jews who bring in communist agents, enemy agitators, all kinds of hideous people from outside, either Jews or whites who are communists. There's an American Jew, Allard Lowenstein, who was later even shot by a white guy who had been his supporter. Allard Lowenstein was one of the first Jews to come into Southern Africa and to start to write stuff against the whites of Southern Africa. He was brought in by Jews in the 1960s, 50s or 60s, to come to what was German Southwest Africa to come and investigate all the hideous things the whites are getting up to there. And he actually helped to kick off a lot of stuff that was very bad for the whites of Southern Africa, especially the South Africans, because South Africa ruled German Southwest Africa. So you'll get all these communist agents, and they'll come in, and they even live in houses that are owned by Jews, and the Jews quietly smuggle them around the country and give them all the dirt on the whites and smuggle them out of the country, and then they go out of the country and then they hammer the whites to hell. So these good Jews, these quotes, good liberal Jews, are busy quietly sticking the knife into the backs of the white South Africans. Afrikaners don't know that they're being knifed by all their good, trusting Jews that are living among them, that the knife is quietly going in from so many different angles. But that gives you a pretty good overview. That's the best overview as per my research and what I've managed to pick up over the years. And there's a lot of particular details that I'd like to focus on later. But this will give you an idea of Jews playing both ends of the spectrum, and then the one side covering for the other, and then striking deals with the whites, and then quietly ignoring all their more evil deeds beforehand. I'm sure that many similar things have gone down in America and other white countries elsewhere, where Jews knife you in one way, and then they come and they pretend to be good from the other side, and then whites are fooled, oh, those were bad Jews, these are the good Jews. Meanwhile, there are no good Jews, they're all working on the same side, and whether they're coming at you from the left or the right, they're busy working to break you down. Whether they use guns on the one hand or words on the other hand, they're busy trying to destroy white power.
So for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know, you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites. We gave you Breaking Bad and all the songs by Creed, all the cast of Friends and trash like Tara Reid, a virtual world of porn so you can spill your seed. Ray-Ban glasses, leggy blondes with tiny asses, frisbee sports and fancy coffee too, energy efficient lights. And so for all this awesome, neat, wonderful stuff, you know you don't thank the Lord, you thank the whites.
Thank the whites, you know you don't.